change has really been around trying to call for universal free school meals across London. Three local authorities in London already offer that as a piece for all primary school children, and we've been asking the other 30 to think about doing that. And we're at the point where we have now secured some money from the City of London to work with two more local authorities to do that. But we're also pushing for other local authorities, especially City of London. If any of you know anyone there, it costs them £25 to feed every primary school child. That would be really cheap. That's something that they should be able to do. So if you want to lobby on that, I'd be really grateful. And the second piece of work that we do is about kind of building the capacity of the voluntary and community sector to engage in efforts to end child poverty. One of the big issues that came out of the work in 2008 around the Child Poverty Commission was that actually there's lots of pockets of work that is being done in London, but there isn't a lot of coordination about that work. And that's primarily because a lot of people work in advice or in housing or in education, but don't kind of have the centre of their work as child poverty. And so we were kind of created to kind of help to weave that thread together. And part of that is these good practice seminars, but also the website and all of the other things that we do, as well as a newsletter, to offer the voluntary sector some kind of real insight into child poverty and a way of kind of accessing some of that expertise and to disseminate that through the whole sector. And the last objective is about kind of helping London boroughs to play an active role in ending child poverty. So we work with boroughs both in terms of implementing child poverty strategies, but also developing those strategies, and also getting the voluntary sector in local areas to kind of hold local authorities accountable to strategies that are being written. And we also sit on a number of child poverty boards to kind of help to kind of bring that good practice across the whole capital as well. So I guess these workshops particularly were kind of set up, you know, to help us share information. We know that there are people who are doing good work or have great insight into issues, but actually that work isn't being shared probably very effectively across a range of organisations. At the moment, 4 and 10 has about 180 member organisations, and they range from really big organisations like the Money Advice Service, very small organisations, and that means actually we're able to cover a real gambit of organisations to kind of share information on. We're also kind of setting these up to help to share good practice. So if Hannah is kind of sharing the information about the data, Paul is kind of talking about good practice, about actually what you can do in terms of investigation and kind of making that happen in terms of telling really good stories, but also to make sure that what we are sharing is really up-to-date knowledge, so that on the big issues in London, that we have information that is as current as we can possibly get it, that we are identifying trends really early, and so we're able to be responsive to those trends and create sort of policy responses to those as well. And also, increasingly, we're looking at trying to build specific knowledge and skills. We've done a piece of work this year around the kind of work with the media, and we're trying to support a network of organisations to improve the quality of their media work, to kind of connect them with other journalists, to make sure that we're kind of connecting stories and making sure that when stories come to us, that people say we want to do a story, we are pushing it around the whole sector, and we're making sure that people are part of that whole thing. So this is, I guess, why 4 in 10 was created. This is the current picture of child poverty in London. And that picture looks really nice on a coloured map, for one, but it's quite interesting in that it's like high concentration in the middle, less concentration outside that, another wave of less concentration, and then Richmond. Gonna stick out as the kind of random, really low child poverty centre. And that has kind of been the historic story of London, is that, you know, inner London is where poverty is concentrated, and then we get concentric circles. But actually what this map doesn't reflect, and I still need to do a map to do that, but it looks too small to look nice on a PowerPoint, is that on the ward level, actually this looks very, very different. So somewhere like Westminster that looks less than Newham, like Islington and Tower Hamlets, actually has one of the wards with the highest levels of child poverty in the whole capital. So like those kind of stories are kind of missing, that kind of pockets of deprivation exists in this. But what this shows is that poverty in London is a cheek to jowl affair. So we have wealth sitting right against poverty, very, very straight on in the capital. And that reality means that often that people kind of overlook poverty because they are are kind of obsessed in their own bubble as well. So they can't think, in my nice Islington house, there could be a family sort of 500 metres down the road who are struggling to kind of pay their heating bill or struggling to eat. And that, I think, is a real issue about kind of poverty in London. It's not desegregated as it often is outside London. It is very concentrated everywhere, and we kind of see those pockets, essentially. And I guess there's a reason for that. The first reason is that London is a really big city. There's a lot of people here, 8 million people, the largest city in Europe. The next largest city has about 3.5 million people. So in terms of kind of scale, there's a lot of concentration of people. And if you look at about 2.1 million people are living in low-income households, you've already set up kind of the beginnings of this equation where actually poverty is going to be quite concentrated in London and it's going to kind of spread through the whole capital. In reality, it means that about 37% of children, which is why our name kind of 4 in 10, it used to be about 40%, so it's fallen a little bit, are living in households where they are living below the government-defined poverty line. And in real numbers, that's 597,000 children. Now, that number of children is more than the numbers of children who are living in poverty in Scotland and Wales combined, and they live in the city. So they're really, London really requires a very targeted look at why poverty is intense, but also at the level of poverty that we have to deal with, the scale of the poverty in the capital. And the key reasons, I guess, apart from sort of those low-income households, the real issues about structural issues in London are about our high housing costs, which are higher than the average in the rest of the country. Our childcare costs are also higher than average than the rest of the country, and our transport costs are higher than average in the rest of the country. So housing is about 31%, childcare is about 23%, transport is about 62% higher than the average. So you kind of put that together and you look at a working family who is living on a low income and they have to pay all of those higher than average costs. There is no way that they can escape the trap of poverty in London. And that's a structural issue of London, and that's why we have to look at some of the kind of structural changes to kind of target where we go in terms of poverty in London. So why this particular good practice seminar? Well, for us, we know that London is a welfare reform hotspot, not in a good way. A lot of the work around kind of welfare reform has been about kind of moving people from worklessness into work, making sure that workers are brought out of poverty. But London is a hotspot not because of unemployment, but it's really because of housing costs. People are more likely in the capital to claim housing benefit than they are outside the capital. So it means actually that London is in this kind of weird bind where people are working but need housing benefit and therefore are capped and are trapped by some of the welfare reforms that are trying to reduce the cost of welfare. So like in London, we do have a big percentage of people who are being affected by a range of different welfare reforms. A second issue for us and why we're really interested in this is about the double bind that London families kind of find themselves in. There's been a lot of talk about kind of moving people out of the capital. I definitely know we've had some off the record conversations with local authorities who have said that, you know, we're going to end up exporting poverty. But essentially the real challenge for London is that, and for those families, is that if they stay in London, they will see welfare reform target them, which would mean that their housing costs will eat away at whatever is left of their income, so they're in a really difficult bind. But if they move out of London, they will have less chances to be employed, and therefore they will be hit by the welfare reform that is trying to hit people who are workless. So they're trapped in this kind of situation where I want to work, and I'm working in London, but actually the welfare reforms don't make that sustainable for me. But if I move out of London, I'm going to end up unemployed, and the welfare reform will penalise me for being unemployed. So you're kind of trapped in this very difficult situation. And the kind of other real interest for us around this area and why we really wanted to look at just not just welfare reform, but welfare reform and data specifically, was that the fact that this is the biggest shape of the welfare benefits in the history of the welfare reform, the welfare state. This is a massive, massive shape-up. And we don't really know what people will do, how they will react, what kind of choices they'll make in response to different types of policies that have come down. This hasn't been just one change. It's been a myriad of changes that households have to kind of navigate across. And for us, we really want to understand, A, how they're coping, but B, actually what choices they're making, so that we can really think proactively about where we position ourselves and where we position the advice that we give local authorities and also the voluntary sector to make sure that we are not leaving people to just fall off the cliff. That isn't, I think even in the worst case scenario, that is not the dream scenario of anybody who has tried to reform the welfare system, and we have to make sure that we are well placed to make sure that that isn't the result of what welfare reforms kind of bring forward. So I'm going to hand over to Hannah to talk about her, what the data